Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, The High Places, was written by Joseph Mindel and is presented in commemoration of Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year.
Released by the gantry cranes, the slender ship emerged, a monument unveiled to an event yet undefined. Long ago, in the early test stages, when it stood on the launching pad of Earth, reaching upward, restrained as it were by the clusters of men with instruments and cables. On that day, there came to someone the words of the book of Genesis. And he dreamed, and behold, a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven. Now the ship that was only a number had a name, and the name was Jacob's Ladder.
3 minutes, Captain Morrison. Your final instrument check should be complete.
Just finishing. Davis?
Engine instruments check.
Clark?
Okay, in the navigation department, Captain.
Controls check. That's it.
Hey, you forgot Doc Fields. You don't want to hurt his feelings.
Thanks, Clark. I just checked. My feelings are under control.
All right, then. Let's get into the acceleration harnesses. Don't touch that dial, Clark.
Only half a minute, Captain. I just want to switch to a network frequency.
What for?
Oh, last send-off, maybe. I'd like to hear that again about intrepid explorers of space, you know?
Sure, historic flight around the moon.
Yeah, that's it, Davis. Modern Magellans circumnavigating a new world.
First men to see the dark side of the moon.
The Francis Drakes of our century.
2 minutes.
I guess you're right, Captain. Suppose I got to believe I was an intrepid explorer. Uh-oh, I better get strapped into the harness.
We'd better all get ready.
Yeah. Look at us. Strapped down flat on our backs.
Reminds me of the operating table when I was 10 years old and had my tonsils out.
Hey, doesn't it remind you of something, Doc?
You tell me.
I was only thinking, must be a new experience for a psychiatrist.
Stop needling, Clark.
I mean lying on a couch like the rest of us patients.
That's enough, I said.
It's all right, Captain Morrison. Let him talk.
Well, we can do without that kind of talk right now.
It's not serious. I wouldn't worry about it.
Oh, I'm worried, Doc. I'm seriously worried.
What, and you, a modern Magellan?
Oh, not me, Davis. I just decided. I don't care what's on the other side of the moon.
What's this all about, Clark? If this is your idea of a joke...
Oh, it's not funny. I keep asking myself, what am I doing here?
You volunteered, like the rest of us, along with a couple of hundred others, and you were picked.
Right now, Captain, that doesn't explain a thing.
Maybe you're making too much of this, Captain Morrison.
Am I? Listen to me, all of you. If one of the voltmeter needles fell off its pivot now, this second, or if the computer of the automatic pilot shorted a 2-inch connection, this flight would be called off.
But, Captain Morrison...
But nothing. Everything has to be just exactly right. I don't like this, not one bit. Dr. Fields, this is your department. What do you say?
Every man here was picked, as you said, Captain, for what he knows and what he can do. Clark is a good man.
He's no good if he falls to pieces.
He was picked after thorough psychological testing.
I want an answer, Dr. Fields. Do we call it off? Yes or no?
I've given you my answer. Why don't you ask Clark?
What's the use? He's too frightened to talk.
What kind of an answer do you want? I'm still in my harness.
All right, Clark. It's an answer.
Final countdown on signal.
Hold your hats, boys. Here we go.
0-10, 9, 8.
I wonder what it's like, Clark.
7.
What?
6.
The other side of the moon.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Fire. Jacob's Ladder, report. Control Center to Jacob's Ladder. Waiting for report. The instruments show the engine is off. Are you out of your acceleration harnesses? Captain Morrison, can you hear me? Captain Morrison.
I hear you.
Is anything wrong, Captain?
What's our distance?
Roughly 2,000 miles. Why didn't you answer?
We were looking. The earth? The sky?
Oh. What's it like, Captain Morrison? Captain?
I can't tell you.
For Pete's sake, there's no secret. Your television cameras are broadcasting the whole earth.
Well, then you know.
The astronomers are going crazy around the screen, but it doesn't look like anything to me. You guys don't talk much, do you?
We've been looking out since the engine stopped. Maybe nobody knows what words to say.
Know what it's like, Captain? Remember the first time you were up in a plane?
Yes, I remember, Clark.
My first flight was from New York to Washington. And I looked down on Chesapeake Bay. You know, all those coves and inlets? And suddenly, for the first time, I believed in geography.
So?
Now I look out. I believe in the world. The earth. Up there.
Up? You mean now?
You don't understand. How can you?
Listen, you blast off from the earth. You're up. We're down. Stands to reason.
Now, you can't argue with me. Where we are, up and down are different. Everything's different. There's just us. And the world. Mumbling to himself.
I've been watching him, Clark. Davis. Davis.
Huh?
Something troubling you?
Oh. No, Doc, no trouble. Just that coasting like this, since the engine cut out, how long? 3 days?
2 more days. We make the turn around the moon.
You get to thinking about things.
What kind of thing?
Well, take this ship. The rocket's fired for 5 minutes or so and then cut off automatically when the tape in the computer figured the speed was right.
I may be wrong, but as I understand it, that was all calculated in advance. Firing time, acceleration, the orbit.
That's right. Figure eight around the moon and back to Earth. And suppose we get off course.
It's very unlikely, Davis.
Even so, Captain, just suppose.
Your job is the engine. Leave the navigation to Clark.
All right. What would Clark do?
I wouldn't do anything. The automatic pilot makes all course corrections.
That's what I mean.
Now, look here, Davis.
Excuse me, Captain. Davis, I'm not sure I know what you mean.
Look, Doc. Here we are, 3 days out from the Earth. The thermostat moves reflectors on the hull if it gets too hot or too cold in here. The radiation detector activates screens. The meteor control seals punctures. Even the observation instruments operate themselves.
Hmm. Isn't that how it was planned by the scientists?
Sure, but what I want to know is, what do they need us for?
Hey, why don't you laugh? Davis said something funny.
He's not laughing, Clark.
He doesn't realize how funny it is. He feels inferior to a machine.
Out here, a man is inferior.
You seem to like the idea, Captain Morrison.
You can count on a machine to do its job without being afraid or bored or feeling inferior.
Without thinking, asking questions.
They warned us when we were in training. There's even a name for it, space fatigue. Is it getting you too, Dr. Field?
I don't know. But a man has a brain.
Yes, a man has a brain, and there are better uses for it than griping and feeling sorry for yourself. Look out there. Go on, Davis, Clark. Tell me. Tell me what you see.
You know what? The moon.
You don't even know how to look. We're seeing the moon closer and plainer than anyone ever saw it. We're making a jump that's bigger than anything since the wheel and fire. That's why we volunteer. That's why we're here. I won't let anybody endanger the job the machines are doing. Is that clear?
Clear enough. But there's something you've forgotten.
I don't think so.
You forget that every one of these automatic machines has a button marked manual control. What are you doing, Clark?
I'm getting ready to take some pictures, Doc.
But
Davis, will you handle the stereo cameras?
Sure thing.
But everything is automatic, radio controlled from the Earth.
Notice where we are, Doc.
Well, the moon does look a little different. I'm afraid I'm not much of a navigator.
Any minute now, we'll be where radio waves from the Earth can't reach us. Behind the moon, Doc.
Seeing what we came nearly a quarter of a million miles to see, the dark side of the moon.
30 seconds. Radio contact ends in 30 seconds.
Ready, Clark? Davis?
All set, Captain.
Check.
So they do need you after all, Davis.
Not now, Dr. Field. We'll be in the moon's shadow for an hour or less, and there's a lot to be done. Clark, start the motion picture cameras now. We were trained for this, Doctor. Just keep out of the way and let us do our job. You'll be seeing what nobody ever saw. Observe what you can.
Captain Morrison, for 5 days, I've been observing what I was trained to observe.
You're entering the moon's shadow. Good luck. Safe journey and
A safe return.
Out of the moon's shadow.
Look fast, Doc. Who knows when you'll see another total eclipse of the Earth by the moon.
There it is. The first crescent.
Good old Earth.
We're out. You can shut off the cameras.
Aye, aye, sir.
The radio, Clark. Thanks. Jacob's ladder to control. We've rounded the moon and we're coming home. That was official. Any special messages?
Just one, Captain. Yippee!
That goes for me, too.
I guess they heard that all right. Now, let's finish the job. Collect the films, and we feed them into the television transmitter.
What, sir?
It's a hurry, Captain.
Those were our instructions, Clark. You know that as well as I do.
Well, I only meant in 5 days, well, they'll have the films themselves.
Of course. But maybe it's just in case...
Sure. Just in case.
Optimistic bunch, aren't they? Well, let's get it done.
I was wondering...
Oh, not again, Dr. Fields.
You'd expect a message of, well, congratulations or something.
Jacob's Ladder to control. This is Jacob's Ladder reporting to control station. We're on the last leg of the orbit. Any instructions? Jacob's Ladder calling Earth Control. Calling Earth. Calling Earth.
Is it
The solar batteries, Clark?
Well, they're outside the hull. As far as I can check from inside, they're not losing power any faster than expected.
The electronic equipment?
Can't find anything wrong.
There must be some explanation, Clark.
Sure, Doc. I can think of half a dozen. We've been in space 5 days, bombarded by ultraviolet and cosmic rays. Who knows what that does to battery elements, to transistors, to the conductivity of metals. Maybe it was some kind of radioactivity from the moon, or damage by microscopic meteors, or...
Never mind speculating. Can you fix it?
I can't find anything to fix, I tell you.
What's all the excitement about? So the radio's dead. So we don't know how the Dodgers made out. We coast for 5 days and then we're home, aren't we? Well? Aren't we?
While I was checking back there, I made some rough calculations. We're drifting off course.
But the automatic pilot...
It's radio control, Davis. Did you forget that?
Oh. Wait, there's something you forgot. The manual control button. You're the navigator, Clark. I'm the engineer. You give me the course corrections, and I'll handle the rocket burst.
With the baby computer on the ship, I can't make exact calculations.
Well, then you'll correct the corrections as we go along. You can do that, can't you?
Yeah. If you had an unlimited fuel supply...
Is there any more bad news that you're keeping secret? No? Well, then, let's get started.
Wait a minute. We can't receive the control station, but can they hear us?
I don't know, Captain, maybe.
There's a chance.
Bare chance?
Clark, you start your calculations. In the meantime, Davis, feed the rest of the films into the television transmitter.
What for?
We were sent to do a job. Let's finish it.
Fuel?
No more, Doc.
What happens now?
Do I have to draw you a picture?
I want to know, Clark.
Look at Davis and you'll know.
Answer me.
We're still 3 days out. We can't make any more course corrections. If we're lucky...
I know, but if not?
If we miss the Earth, the ship will keep going in space forever.
They can't just leave us hanging nowhere.
Take it easy, Davis.
What are we supposed to do, just wait doing nothing?
Got any ideas?
Get out of my way, Clark.
Don't touch the radio.
I'll make them answer. Jacob's ladder to control. Jacob's ladder to control.
No use, Davis.
Jacob's ladder to control. For the love of God, answer us.
You're wasting your breath. The radio's dead.
How do you know, Clark?
What kind of question is that, Doc? I checked it, didn't I?
And you found nothing wrong. Maybe the trouble is not with our radio.
What are you driving at?
You know what I mean. Maybe they can't answer us.
Well, it's not possible. We were out of contact less than an hour.
How long does it take? Maybe in that hour the missiles were finally released. Maybe yesterday the bombs fell at last and every city on Earth was covered with the cloud of death. And those who remain have forgotten us.
The rotten murderer.
Stop it, Davis.
They're leaving us here to die, Captain. They can't be...
It wasn't necessary to hit him, Captain.
It was necessary to remind him that he's still alive.
For how long?
Nobody gave us any guarantees. We took the risk. What of it? There's a risk every time you cross the street. But we're not dead yet. And as long as we're alive, there's a chance. Maybe we'll go into orbit around the Earth. Maybe they'll find a way of reaching us.
Do you really believe that?
It doesn't matter. This ship will be run on that basis on regular schedule, and right now the schedule calls for food.
I'm not hungry, Captain.
So much the better. As of this minute, we're on half rations, in case there is a chance.
Morrison.
Huh?
Doc, wake up.
What's the matter?
Davis.
Yes?
Davis has a can of food.
What?
One,
Look at the cans he's eating.
Well, I'll kill him.
Yes.
Kill him!
No, this is wrong.
Hold on!
No, let him go, Morrison. He's unconscious. Morrison.
Clark, help me
get him away.
Healing our fool? Gorging himself like an animal?
How is he, Clark?
He's coming out of it.
Oh, good.
Doc. Dr. Fields.
How far we came to find out what we are.
You're no better than the rest of us.
I am no better. I beat him as you did. My fists are also wet with his blood.
Then shut up.
Are you still afraid to understand?
I've had enough, Fields. Do you hear?
I will explain it to you.
I warn you, there's a limit to what a man can stand.
No, Morrison, there is no limit, and we are the proof. Man was born to walk on the earth, but it was not enough for him. He also wanted to swim beneath the waters and move through empty space. And he did.
You make it sound wrong.
Only because in doing it, he destroyed the earth and himself, for all we know.
Why were you picked for this? You never looked at the stars and hated the distances between you. You never loved the metal of the ship. The heat of the rocket flame that could bring you to the stars? Why did they send you?
Because ships do not go for their own sake. Because if men journey to observe the dark side of the moon...
Not only the moon, someday the stars.
It is still necessary to understand the observers as well. I also have a report to make, Captain Morrison.
What can you say when you never believed in this from the beginning? When you don't believe in what man is capable of.
I remember what Clark said the first day. From a plane, he first believed in geography. Where must we be and what must we do in order to believe in man?
Words again. It's too late for words.
It's too late for anything except words and understanding. We have reached where no man ever reached, and I see Davis with blood on his face, and I am ashamed for him and for us. If we followed the orbit of the stars and pulled the planets around by strings, and I saw the blood on his face, I would still be ashamed. I must make my report. Clark, the radio.
Doc.
They must know what a wonderful thing it is that man should learn to breathe in water and to fly in air and empty space. But it's not enough. No. He must also learn to walk like a man. They must understand it, don't you see? Everybody in the world must know it. Only who will tell them, Clark? Who will tell them?
This is written. He dreamed, and behold, a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven. And behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it. A day is enough, an hour. There is time for the children of men when they will learn how to set their feet on the rungs of Jacob's ladder to reach the high places. For is it not also written, Thou hast made them but little lower than the angels? The time is now, and the words are said on Rosh Hashanah, the day of the new year. Then shall the just also see and be glad, and all wickedness shall be wholly consumed like smoke, when thou makest the dominion of arrogance to pass away from the earth. And in this season of the year, the anniversary of creation, let another prayer be spoken. In the book of life, may we be remembered and inscribed. He who maketh peace in his high places, may he make peace for us and for all men. If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Dr. David de Sola Poole, Rabbi Emeritus of the Historic Spanish and Portuguese Synagogue in New York City. Dr. Poole.
In the story to which we have just listened, there is suggested something of our fabulous progress in mastering the mechanics of living. We can now peer into the very constitution of the atom, and we are preparing to explore the infinity of stellar space. Yet, today's piling up of armaments born of such scientific research threatens the very destruction of human society tomorrow. Science, symbolized by man's flying to the moon and beyond, can mechanize life with almost incredible techniques, but it cannot give it a soul. Unless our progressive control of physical life is accompanied by a sensitizing of our spiritual life, man's future will be dark indeed. If we are to be saved from self-destruction by our newly discovered technology, the power of religion must be greater than that of nuclear fission. Life on Earth will retain its meaning, its beauty, its soul, and its very existence only in the measure that the work of statesmen and scientists will be illumined and controlled by the supreme moral and spiritual force of religion, with human efficiency wedded to the triumphant morality that is the essence of all religion. It is in this spirit the Jews the world over will throng tonight and the days following to their synagogues to celebrate their religious new year by praying and resolving that in the coming year they will help make life on earth a heavenly experience of love, beauty, and peace. They will come forth from their synagogues with souls strengthened by a moral upsurge and a determination to help achieve a better life on earth. For they will have sacredly reaffirmed the unshakable faith of their prophets that life can and must be made ever better, that human nature can and must be ever more ennobled, that war shall be no more, and that all men shall be one in brotherhood and love of neighbor, with human life flowering into the kingdom of God on earth.
Thank you, Dr. Poole. Eternal Light drama today, The High Places, was written by Joseph Mindel and was presented in commemoration of Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. Canta David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Guy Repp, Leon Jenny, Ralph Camargo, Joseph Julian, and Roger DeCoven. Your narrator was Norman Rose. This is Lionel Rico speaking. Our program is directed by George Voutsas. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.